and welcome to this edition of Billionaires in Boxers with me, your host, Phil Palucha. I am joined by Daniel Wood. Daniel is the co-founder of World Freestyle Football Association. Yes, that is a thing, and it's an awesome thing, and he's going to tell us all about it. Daniel, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Phil. It's a pleasure to be here. Great to finally have this chat.
Definitely. You and I are going to have a lot of fun. We're going to go down the rabbit hole. So for people who haven't come across you or your work before, why don't you just give us a brief introduction to you and what your world looks like?
How chaotic do you want me to go? Okay. So,
go crazy. They're used to chaos.
No, my world is fairly straightforward on the outside, at least. I work, my name's Daniel. I'm from a very small town, Yeovil, in the southwest of England. I currently reside in Berlin in Germany, where my son goes to school, and I use any excuse I can to get on a plane. I have a slight addiction to travel. My world has kind of circled around sport in general, but I've homed in definitely with a football at the core of it. To sort of flag one of the many random things I do, back in 2006, I stumbled into the world of street football, and fast forward 17 years or so, and we have a World Freestyle Football Association, a governing body for juggling and acrobatics with a ball. There's your very, very top line version of what I did.
I love it. No, that's absolutely phenomenal. So what was it particularly about street football and freestyle football that kind of grabbed your attention?
The people, the children, the young people. I shouldn't call them children. They were adults as well. It was the blend of, it was just so authentic. Boys, girls, able-bodied, disabled, everyone had the same access. It was just a ball, and it was just about self-expression and incredibly humble, down-to-earth people that were, pushing themselves, 5-6 hours a day to juggle for no other reason than to better themselves. Okay, they were always on the scrounge or the look for a TV commercial or a chance to earn a few dollars, but it was really authentic. It was just about being the best version of them and immersing themselves into the ball and expressing themselves in a way that I'd never seen, or at least to anyone of my generation will have seen in Joga Bonito adverts from Nike back in the day and the like. So I just thought, wow, this is amazing. I was never keen on being an agent, although background in sports marketing, I kind of knew how to position these athletes and individuals, but I was just very honest with them and said, listen, I'd love to help. And I just became big brother to everyone that I met along the way. Again, fortunate to travel a lot, so met these communities everywhere in the world, and found a niche, found an opportunity.
I love that. So you talk about accessibility. That's an interesting one, especially in an age where, we're probably not too dissimilar in age. I remember, going to the football as a kid was pretty much affordable for most people, whereas now, the age demographic of the average fan in the Premier League is 50 plus because cost of tickets is through the roof. So football doesn't feel as accessible as it once did, particularly football at particularly high standard. So when you're mentioning that this is accessible to all, able-bodied people, young, old, etc., it's almost bringing back the raw love of the game and of football in general and of just playing with a ball. I remember growing up, I don't think we played with any rules for years. We just had a ball, and often in our street and in our school, it was just one giant continuous game for months at a time. Nobody was even keeping score. It was just having fun, right?
There's no purer game of football than, jumpers for goalposts and winner stays on. There's no way that anyone can replace that. So, of course, the industry has grown, and that's largely financial related. It's, it's a demand from the broadcasters just as much as the brands to grow and to create bigger revenues to employ more people and be bigger. Mm. But the purity of it is so simple and straightforward. All you need is a ball. At least that's what we are. That's our slogan for freestyle. Interestingly, we are actually trying to really, I wouldn't say separate, but clearly identify our own channels, and football is so big. But freestyle at the end of the day is, I think, a reflection of everything that you've just described. Play in particular, that's one word that I emphasize with everything I do. It's kind of my purpose, linked to my purpose, you could say, that Yeah. It's about unlocking curiosity. People aren't curious anymore. They kind of settle for what we see in front of the screen or in front of us. And when you start to challenge that and play and become a kid again, it's amazing what the body can do, what your mind can do, and the opportunities that come from it. So, yeah.
I love that. No, I do. I love it. And I definitely resonate with that. Look, I had a question for you about the actual association and why that was created. Because, you know, if we look at the parallels to football and many of the associations, the early associations created in the 1800s, they were done so because there was lots of different variants and rules and people doing their own thing with the sport. And it was to try and bring some unity. So without trying to put some words in your mouth, I mean, what was the motivation for you to have an association? So, I mean, you said you came from sports marketing. So why an association for the sport as opposed to a sports branding agency or a marketing agency trying to get those sponsorship deals for the sport?
It's a good question. But I think the when you look at the word authenticity, that was where I've come from my journey in sport. And I was very aware of that. And to the point of never would I say negative about other brands especially, but you know, I've been brought up an Adidas man, so I was always wearing I was an Adidas boot. The brand was mine. It was my first professional job, was working for them actually in Germany, so I did the sports marketing interest there, and I was exposed to that side of the industry very quickly and early on, and it was definitely an inspiration, I would say. So you know, the globalization of sport and how from such a headquarter base you can impact so many countries around the world and give them the opportunity to translate and dissect a strategy into their own markets just fascinated me, and I thought, oh, one day I'd like to do something, you know, similar to this in some capacity. But when, as soon as I met the community again, I knew I wanted to work for myself one day. I just didn't know what and how. Classic, as everyone I'm sure yourself can testament. You just stumble into some opportunities, and through the discussions in the early days, it was not about setting up an association. It was not about let's build a sport. That was not the intention. The first intention selfishly was these kids are amazing and they're already getting huge traction online and live, like instant traction. They can teach, they can communicate. It's like so many amazing things about them. What if through that attraction they could actually deliver education? So that was my first hook, was what if we could talk about life skills, talk about bullying, nutrition, whatever it might be, through the ball and through the skills. You know, the influence of music and the dance elements. There was so many things that appealed to so many different sections of society. It wasn't just about football. So that was kind of my business hat on, was saying, oh, how do we deliver this education? Then through speaking to the athletes and being very clear that, you know, I'm not an agent. I don't want to be just looking for jobs for you. That's not going to float my boat forever. What do you want to do? And I just reversed it. And it's just, again, another sign of society. No one listens anymore. They're all on a mission, running 100 miles an hour to do their own thing. And just stop and listen and appreciate what's going on around you. And when I did that, it was very obvious. There was a few things happening in parallel. And one of them was Red Bull had launched a competition in 2008, which was the first battle. So this is kind of what started getting people in the community saying, huh, hang on, this is a sport now. This is not just an art of showing our skills. So they give credit to them. They created a guy called Hayes who still works for them over in Florida. He created the idea of a breakdance battle, but with a ball. So 3 minutes, a live judging panel, and each judge represents a different criteria. So creativity and style and difficulty. A winner goes on. It's a knockout competition. So what they did, however, because again, this is the inception, I was just talking and listening to the community, and one of the top athletes in the world back then, he was, I've talked about him in many different contexts over the years and probably linked to many stories or blogs that you might find. He was the UK champion at the time. He won a Nike competition in 2003, which was like an open freestyle contest of jugglers and entertainers in general. And they basically used an image of him, a silhouette of him from a very well-known picture, and made the logo of the competition without any wow. credits or support.
Oh, wow.
So they did a classic brand mistake, as I would call it. They didn't yeah. respect the street. They just did their own thing and said, oh, this is us now. This is our brand. Plus, they the ones who wrote the rules, and they kind of went out and did it. Mm. So the feedback I was getting was, it's great, this is amazing, but it's not fair. Like, this is not us. It's not what we're doing, actually. So that was the first trigger. It was like, okay, maybe there's more. And then, yeah, roll on a few years, and it was like, actually, let's build a way that you can co-own this, because no sport in the world actually listens to the athletes. Like, they talk a good game, and there's lots of committees for this and that and the other, but there's not really a voice for the most important factor of any sport, which is the participant.
Correct.
And so, yeah, so that was like, well, let's reverse that. What if you all came together and we created a co-ownership model? I must totally admit, it's taken a long time. We've actually just this week, I can say. So we're in early April, just going into now. We just launched an actual, in partnership with a company called OwnCo. We're actually literally bringing that to life now. So you can vote on everything from the rules, the judging criteria, the design of the next t-shirt, that absolutely everything in the sport is going to the community first. So yeah, it was just, again, opportunity and seeing gaps in the market.
I love that. So there's a lot to unpack there, but it sounds a lot like the authenticity was under threat. You know, so a brand had recognized the potential power of this and had started to do their own thing, but it had very quickly moved away from what made this special for so many people. So I love that model. I also love what you said about, well, two things, actually: listening to the market and listening to the athlete, which are actually, I think, are two distinct things. I often say in my business that the best products and services that I've ever sold weren't designed by me. They were designed by my clients saying to me, can you do this? Can you help us with this? Because ultimately, it's them spending the money. It's them putting their hand in their pocket. It's them doing the work. So if that's what they want, then let's give them what they want. But so many people don't do that. I mean, I often tell the story of I won't name them because I'll get sued. But a large corporate that I was working with, and we were in a board meeting, and we spent 3 hours in this board meeting, and I just sat shaking my head the whole time. And it was about customer engagement. How do we get more customer engagement? How do we do more with the customers? And then they came to me and they said, you've been very quiet, which is unusual. Why are you so quiet? And I said, I was wondering how many hours it was going to take you to realize that if we're talking about customer engagement, it might be a good idea to have some customers in here. Because it was just the board all discussing the ideas themselves. Yeah. And it's like, well, who better to tell you than the people who you're trying to address, the people you're trying to talk to? Ask them what they want. So, no, I absolutely love that. Yeah. And I love where this came from, right? The authenticity. I mean, having been an athlete and having worked with a number of them, people, I think, from the outside look and see that the athletes have all the power. They really don't. In fact, they're not even listened to all that much. They are part of a big machine. But as we learned during coronavirus, you can play football without fans. It's a weird experience with empty stadiums, but it can be done. But if the players decide on Saturday that they're not turning up to the game, there is no game.
Yep, exactly. No, that's it. And, you know, you've got to then look at the other dynamic. There's loads of dynamics. I mean, we haven't got long enough to unpack all of it today, but the what usually has come back as a question point from everyone I've spoken to in let's say traditional sports anyway, is, yeah, but what about the experience level, the mentality, the mindset, the education behind a lot of them? You know, some of the, especially old school football, you know, everyone dropped out of school early to just commit to football and didn't necessarily get the academic skills that you associate with business. I mean, again, I think we come from a very similar place of, it's not about that anyway. Like, academics are there to support and fast track some people, but at the end of the day, you don't learn much that way. You've got to get out there and learn the industry and be hands on. So I think, what better way than playing the sport to know exactly how it works? You know, why aren't there more referees who are ex-footballers? They're just you know the game better than anyone. Don't let anyone else tell you what's a foul and what's not. You should know more. So take it in, you know, take control.
No, exactly. And that's a really good way of looking at it, actually, because I think My theory on education has always been that it's just that, it's theory. And then you have to go into the industry and learn how it actually works. And there is, there is definitely something to be said by throwing yourself in at the deep end and immersing yourself in an industry and learning. One of the things I want to touch on just before we kind of move on was the social impact element. Because I feel like this is something, and I don't want to have a bit of, too much of a dig at football. I love the industry. I work a lot in mainstream football. But one thing that I would definitely say is that it came second, right? Social impact is now something that often clubs and associations do because now they almost feel like they have a moral obligation to because of the platform that they have. But it wasn't designed with social impact in mind.
Totally. No, that's it. I mean, CSR, corporate social responsibility, has become a department in its own right, which is crazy and ludicrous, in my opinion. It's if you want to look at it in a simple firm, it's sustainable marketing, right? At the end of the day, you've got a team there, you've got a product. If you actually care about your customer and your audience, then you will do something about it and you will do it forever. And you don't have to ring fence a separate budget for that. It's just part and parcel of the DNA of what you do. But yeah, you're right. People like traditional sport, however, have come from a different route. So they sort of started at the elite and now they're focusing on the grassroots to make sure that the audience are not going elsewhere, even though they obviously are at the moment.
No, I love that. Okay, so I'm putting up some graphics on screen now, as you can see as we're talking. If you are listening to this on the radio or podcast, I will include a link so that you can have a look at those below, because some of these numbers actually blew my mind, Daniel. So we're talking about audience and we're talking about reach. I mean, 5.6 billion total views across social media of this content says that there is a real appetite and a real hunger for this. I mean, in an age where the audience is power, that gives you a lot of clout, surely.
100%. And that number, by the way, was just our sort of organization platforms with 30 of the athletes. There are over 15,000 athletes in the world. So if we actually added it all up, then we'd be ridiculous.
That's incredible.
So, yeah, I mean, it blew our mind as well, to be honest. We're aware of, you know, the boom of social and the importance of snackable content and shareable content. And that freestyle fits into that bag so easily. A, we've got a ball. So obviously every sport, but especially the football audiences, they're looking at it straight away. And B, you know, a battle, as I kind of briefly described, is 3 minutes long in total, made up of three rounds of 30 seconds for each competitor. So you're talking 30 seconds, and you can just chop one event up into hours and hours of really enjoyable nonstop action. So it fits, it works with the now. I don't know what's next. I'm very curious to see how things evolve. I always am. I don't settle with what we've got, but I can't see the next iteration just yet. We're just going to keep evolving with every platform that comes and come up with some different, you know, content formats ourselves, I'm sure. But yeah, you know, social media is the thing right now, and we're definitely all over it. It's TikTok and Instagram first, 100% for us right now.
I think one of the things that we've seen a lot during the last few recessions, and actually during coronavirus as well, is that agility is the thing that keeps you fresh, right? So trying to plan 10 to 15 years in advance makes you a big oil tanker, and it's very hard to change from that mission, where if all you're looking at is the next few steps ahead of you, it gives you the opportunity to jump on when something like TikTok arrives and you say, great, how do we take advantage of that opportunity? Rather than, no, we haven't planned for TikTok. We're a MySpace people. Yep. Let's push for that, because then you don't exist anymore. So I love that. I wanted to ask, though, when we're talking about two things. So number one is about when you're talking about the battles, where are these typically broadcast? I mean, obviously you're getting a lot of views and shares from the clips on social media, but do you have your own broadcasting channels for this? Is this something that you're currently partnering with the likes of ESPN, Sky, BT to try and go more kind of mainstream route with sharing this content? How can people really engage with these competitions?
Yes, good question. So everything is social first. So our strategy is in the now, right now anyway. Actually, just to touch back on what you just briefly said, is I can totally empathize with that, only because honestly, we usually operate with a maximum of 6 months notice before we go into events. So we're not planning. We are planning. You know, I've got Host Tender going out for next year's World Championships next week, actually. But it's like usually it's lastminute.com with everything anyway, which is in our favor basically.
Absolutely, I agree.
So yeah, broadcast is, so our strategy is all you need is a ball. Again, the slogan says it all, and we want to make sure that that accessibility is at the forefront always. So we are avoiding OTT. We don't want to go pay-per-view with this. We want to make sure that especially the core stream, at least the live stream, can be up to 4 hours sometimes for some of these events, which is, you've got to really love freestyle to stay for 4 hours. But you know, we're getting 40,000 to 60,000 views of that within the first 24 hours on average. And so first of all, it's social. So Twitch, YouTube, Facebook will do the full live stream, and then we'll be intercepting with TikTok and Instagram for the short little bite size off feeds. And then how we work with broadcasters, however, is that they either pick up on a lot of the snippets of that for their channels, and now we're packaging up kind of 27 minute highlights reels and distributing that to more mainstream TV networks now, for the years ahead. So this is a very new evolution. We've had 50 plus countries, major broadcasters from your Globos in Brazil to Super Sports in Africa, you name it, and they've featured something. ESPN, you mentioned. But we haven't really formalized the distribution until 2023. This is one of the new push outs this year. So
I love that. Well, congratulations on that. That's really cool. I think for many people, this will be really maybe even their first introduction to the sport. You know, you and I grew up playing the likes of, you know, FIFA on the PlayStation or whatever. And I remember FIFA Street, and you would get extra skills and points for the things that you could deliver. And you know, you would almost forget to play the game. You were so busy trying to do the skills. It was phenomenal. And you know, there was a whole generation of that. And for years, I saw people, particularly FIFA fanatics in terms of the video game we're talking about here, for anybody that's not familiar, you know, people would often be annoyed. It's like, why can't we have more FIFA Street? When are you bringing out another FIFA Street? And then the latest one, they have kind of brought out a bit more of a freestyle competition on the actual game, which I thought was fun. But what I wanted to touch on with you here, because I mean, I'm mindful of the clock, but there's so much we could talk about. You and I could go full Joe Rogan with this and just spend the next 4 hours talking about it, but maybe we'll have to do a part two. But on screen right now is a graphic that you actually shared recently, which is the world map. Now, there's a lot of data on here, but I specifically want to ask you, what surprised you about this when you did this and you were looking at the percentages in particular continents and countries and locations? As somebody who's already kind of immersed in that world, what surprised you about that data?
Well, the overall figures were the big one. I mean, the split is something we've seen a lot of, and it's we've got a community again. I guess that let me go from the point of view of the football fan who looks on, and every conversation, to be honest, even with sponsors, broadcasters that we have, is surely this is big in Brazil. Surely this is big in UK, right? They look at the footballing nations and think that that's the natural correlation. And there is a degree of it. However, the reality is actually really exciting, because it's real, what you would say, abstract countries in terms of their football authenticity. And that sounds really horrible to say. Now I'm going to quote some of the countries, but you know where I'm coming from.
Oh, I certainly do. Yeah, I certainly do.
So yeah, for us, it's like Mexico is enormous. Yeah, Mexico again, footballing, but they've been really successful culturally at street level there with freestyle, in a similar way to how I started with it, as a kind of diversion tool to get kids off the street and into employment or education. In Japan, enormous, phenomenal community in Japan. Top four in the world every single year, guaranteed. Wow. But because they focus on style and being cool, as opposed to the technically like crazy fast moves that you might see, they wear jeans and hoodies, and they don't look like footballers at all. There's no correlation apart from the ball there, but the style and the musicality is just phenomenal. Then there's little shoots. So Indonesia, you'd expect, because of the size of the football audience that they've got there. But countries like Iran are really exciting for me when you see, especially the females playing in Iran. There's an amazing movement started at the just before the pandemic kind of era. And girls would meet on a regular occasion in Tehran just to train, and over they worked up to about over 300 girls every week coming down to this one spot and practicing and training and competing then online through the pandemic as well. And it just showed that you can create these safe spaces for anyone to play anywhere and consume it. And ultimately, yeah, people are hungry for content. They want to see football related content everywhere. So the figures are very representative of that, I think.
Well, I was particularly impressed by the numbers in Asia, because Asia, you know, Asia actually dominated in terms of even looking at the North America. I was looking at that thinking, wow, I mean, this is, that's phenomenal. I mean, what it shows as well with that map, I mean, it lit up like a Christmas tree. But what I particularly liked about that map was one of the things that drew me to sport, not just football, but sport in general, is the fact that it crosses borders. It's, you know, we have wars over religion. We have wars over language. We have wars over theory and wealth. But yet football transcends it all. Sport transcends it all. It's multicultural. We have the same ball being played, the same competition being played all over the world. And I absolutely love that. And this is another great example of that. In fact, football obviously originally started with the public schools, but then it was adopted by the masses, right? It was adopted by the street. It was we took it and it became our game. It was like, okay, thanks, Eton, it's ours now. And we took over the sport. And what you're talking about right here feels like tapping back into that authenticity of this belongs to the street. This belongs to us. This is our sport.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think also it's the access to progression as well. So what you find, I mean, from us growing up anyway, it was all about playing football for your local team first and foremost, and very proudly so as well. I don't hear any of that anymore. It's like everyone wants to just play for the top leagues, especially outside of Europe. It's like there's no appreciation for just playing and growing and
the love of the game,
getting that moment. So but then that's a sign again of the, you know, inflation of the we all want to earn money at the top, and they see those dollar signs, and it changes your perspective, I guess. But I think what it works really well for us especially is, because all you need is a ball, the rural areas that don't have the infrastructure, that don't have the same facilities that you need for development, you can progress, you can share, you can benchmark your content online, even if you have to walk a few kilometers to get to a point sometimes a week to, you know, to upload your videos, as some of our community do. You can be seen absolutely everywhere, and you don't need much space. You just need a ball. You can, or not even a ball. People are making balls out of whatever they can find as well. So it's that kind of simplicity again, and that accessibility that's kind of now, you know, and the world needs a bit of hope like this, I think.
I agree. And congratulations on your success. I love it, and long may it continue. It's powerful, and I'll certainly be keeping much more of an eye out for it. I mean, we were talking off air. The reason I was very keen about this interview was it's something that I knew was out there, but I knew very little about, shamefully, and I wanted to learn more. And who better to go to than the man right at the top? So, look, we're getting to the end of the interview, but there's a very important question that I want to ask you, because I was curious about, you know, levels of maybe collaboration with the likes of other governing bodies, like the likes of FIFA, likes of UEFA. Is there much kind of connection? Is there much communication? But I think you may well answer this in this final question, because you made a statement online a few weeks ago. And as soon as I read it, I took another look back, my eyebrows raised, and I said, okay, I have to ask him what he means by that. And you said that freestyle football doesn't need football. Football needs freestyle football. So what is it you meant by that?
Ooh, which layer should we start?
Hit me with it. Let's go as deep as you want.
I very much stand behind this. The whole community does. My co-founders and I, so Steve, Lucasso, the whole team, this is what we're about, is creating a pathway for street talent everywhere to enjoy the ball and be the best versions of themselves, and not just to use that ball and playing a team and hope that one day they'll be in the 0.01 percentage that gets picked up by a club.
Sure.
So with that in mind, on one level, it's again, accessibility, authenticity, play, freedom. You don't have that in football, and you totally have that in freestyle. You know, in football, you have to wait for a coach and then a referee and then 10 other teammates and blah, 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 blah. There's so many layers to actually, it's not all you need is a ball at all, whereas for us is. So I think for play, for raising participation levels, that's one angle. Then the biggest part, I guess, is what we've reflected on for the chunk of this, which is the content and the eyeballs and the, you know, at the end of the day, I don't agree with what everyone's saying that Gen Z and then Alpha Next and everyone are losing their attention spans, actually. There's just as much long-form content being watched out there. It's just enjoyed in a different way and with multi-devices and there's other distractions, right? So, but that being said, it is dwindling in terms of people that are going to the stadium or can afford to go to the stadium. So,
definitely,
you know, I guess that's a whole subject in itself. But overall, it's like we don't need to wait for FIFA to call us to come to the World Cup and do lots of performances and entertain. Like, we're going to do that anyway, or the athletes will do it on their own, or we'll program something. We've got enough interest now from cities, from brands, from everyone and broadcasters to actually celebrate this as a sport in its own right. If FIFA and UEFA, and we do work with them and we've got no issues, we do a lot of activations. We've done some, including a women's only event with the first women's Champions League in Budapest a few years back.
Fantastic.
We're talking all the time. We were in Qatar recently with them. So there's loads of, you know, collaborations. It's just at the end of the day, we're not scoring goals.
No.
So we just want to have fun with the ball, and that shouldn't be criticized as, oh, you can't do that in a game, so why would you bother? You don't do that in a game because you can do it on the street. Simple as that.
Well, I'll tell you this. I have two daughters under the age of 10 and both are football mad. It's hardly a surprise given who their father is. And to be fair, my wife is also a fanatic as well. So that's actually how we met. We met on Twitter because I was talking about football. 10 years later, married. And it's a weird story, isn't it? But yeah, it's not a surprise that my children like it. But here's the thing. We're Liverpool fans as a family. But by the by, Premier League tickets are expensive. So I took my family to a game, all four of us, and I didn't see change from 500 quid from one game, right?
Yep.
And about a week or so after the game, we were walking through Liverpool City Centre and there was a street performer juggling with the ball. And I'm telling you, my two children were far more engaged with that street juggler than they were with the game. One of my children got bored and got her iPad out halfway through the game on the cop, sat with her iPad, right?
Wow.
And my other one wanted to know everything that was going on because she couldn't really tell. And she said to me, I like the singing, but I actually prefer watching it on TV because I can see what's going on. She couldn't really understand what was going on from the crowd, right?
Interesting.
But they were mesmerized by this street performer juggling the ball, this person who was doing these incredible tricks, this person who was clearly very talented and had spent a lot of time playing with the ball. And they were fascinated. And what I noticed was when we went home, they had a football in the garden with our dog and they were trying to spin on the ball and they were trying to do skills and tricks. What they didn't do is go home and reenact the game that we just watched at Anfield, right? So I thought it was
Liverpool, so there probably wasn't any goals, right?
Yeah, it was actually a good game. It was like 4-1 as well. They were like, oh, it was all right. And I was like, it was a great game. I lived through the Roy Hodgson era, you know, where it's like 0-0 draws against Wigan on New Year's Day, where it's -5 and, you know, fingers are freezing off. So it's like, I deserve this.
Absolutely.
But it, all joking aside, you know, they were far more engaged with that. That was where they found the game to be fun. So, you know, when they're playing around in the garden with a ball, they are not scoring goals. They are not, you know, playing rules. They are not reenacting things. I mean, I remember when I was younger, I used to pretend to be Michael Owen and score goals in the World Cup, kicking the ball against the wall. They're not doing that. They're trying to chip it up to each other and do skills and trying to dance with the ball and trying to have fun. So I can see a lot of the new generation, maybe because they've been pushed out of football because of pricing and economics. Maybe it's because of the demographics of football have changed. Maybe it's gone too commercialized. But the point is that what I'm loving about everything you've said is that authenticity. It is the fact that it is raw. It's the fact that it's open to everybody. That I think is really powerful. And I'm really excited to see what the future holds for you. And I'm glad that you only know 6 months in advance, because that keeps things exciting, right?
Thanks, Phil. No, that's really nice to hear and reassuring. We'll look forward to seeing your daughters compete in a few years' time.
Exactly,
But you know what? That is part of the romance of it, is that as difficult as it looks at the highest level, when you see some of the crazy moves that are backflips and all kinds of combinations doing, you know, with a ball, everyone, and I swear I'll stand by this forevermore, even if you've never kicked a ball before, will learn a trick within 2 minutes of having a go. Whether you're doing that on your own or with some instruction, there is a way, because there's no rules, right? There's no right or wrong here. So you can build self-confidence on a ball very, very quickly if you've got a ball and you can get into it. And then it's just trial and error. And yeah, there's a lot of failure. So the fall off we have is more the stubbornness, I guess, to actually say, right, I've got to train over and over and over and keep failing and then find my own way to do this. So, but that's a nice problem to have. It's nice that it's niche. It's nice
that's a that wonderful problem to have. And actually, we were talking earlier, just very briefly touching on education and the fact that, you know, that it's a lot of theory and then learning about the industry. I feel like education fails entrepreneurs because it prepares you to be like a generalist. And what you've just described right there is the skill sets that are required to be an entrepreneur, a business owner. It's resilience. It's how many times you're prepared to fail before you succeed. And that stubbornness to say, no, I'm going to keep going now, because if I failed this often, it was going to be for something, right? I'm going to get the payoff at the end. So actually, it sounds like you're developing the next generation of entrepreneurs there as well, with that level of resilience and never say never attitude.
Which is a large part of why I enjoy teaching entrepreneurship and innovation as another of the hats that I wear. So yeah, exactly. There's lots of things that you can correlate and resonate with.
I love that. Daniel, we're going to put some links on screen just now and also in the chat below if you're listening to this via audio. Where would you like people to go? How can they go and consume more of this content? You were talking about social first. Where can they find you? Where would you suggest if somebody's listening to this going, this sounds awesome, where do I begin? What's the answer?
Well, it is literally all around you. But yeah, certainly if you want to go to the nucleus of all the events and see where the next ones are and what's going on, then on all the social channels, we are, as an organization, under VWFFA, so THEWFFA. And I mean, there are so many incredible athletes all over the world. I would really recommend homing in on, you can just search. There's no, I can't obviously quote every one of them, but search where you are and freestyle. Find someone that's not too far away. The best thing is that they train publicly usually as well. So, you know, we got world champions training with beginners and everyone. Wow. It's a very family kind of vibe. So yeah, there's some schools that are being formalized in some areas, and we're going to try and get into the school system in as many countries as possible with some of the academics that we're writing. But just have a look around the streets and come and chat to freestylers. They're very open and they'll at least teach you a trick. I can guarantee you that.
I absolutely love that. And then you don't get that in football. Virgil van Dijk's not teaching me how to be a better defender, I can tell you that much. Before we go, is there anything that you would have liked me to ask you that I haven't asked you?
Not at all, Phil. It's been a pleasure to speak to you, and I appreciate your time and your journey. I will definitely take this offline and carry on the conversation. But yeah, no, I would, you know, welcome everyone to have a go, to pick up a ball and you know, use your spare time wisely. Lockdown was a blessing. Even I got involved then. I can't say I'm a freestyler myself, but I'm an enthusiastic that can do a few now thanks to lockdowns. But yeah, it's a good way of staying fit and healthy. All you need is a ball. Listen to your favorite music and have some fun.
Daniel, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you being here. If you are listening to this on the audio, be sure to check out the show notes for all of those links and go and check it out. If you've been watching this on the streaming channel, television channel, or indeed on LinkedIn, you've seen some of those videos already, and I imagine you're probably currently juggling a ball. Take it outside. Don't do it in the house. That was always the rule I was told, or you'll be buying a new TV. But I look forward to seeing you next time. I hope you've enjoyed the interview. And until then, take care yourself.
Thank you. If that's what you want, making money while you're in your box of shorts, feel like nothing or nobody is stopping you. Even when I said it was impossible, no need for hesitation. Feel P, yeah, that's your man. Go from the best kept secret to the go-to brand. Let's go. Hey, billionaires, billionaires and boxers. Hey, billionaires, billionaires and boxers. Hey, time to grow, make the world know all about ya. Hey, billionaires, billionaires and boxers. Let's go.